Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to talk about these things called songs. Electric word songs, it means a melody, and that's a mighty big thing. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. A hit song. Lisa's been drinking. A hit song can bring the person who wrote it a world of never-ending happiness. You can always hear the song, day or night. So when you call up that lawyer in Beverly Hills, you know the one. He used to represent Dr. Luke. Instead of asking him, can you sue those people talking about your song? You should listen to the show. Because on this show, we talk about the songs. On this show, it's all about the songs. And if you don't download the podcast, you're crazy. This week on One Song, let's go crazy. Woo! Now let's hear the real person sing it. I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who sometimes talks about interpolation on the internet.
Love that you always whisper that. And this week we have, I've been looking forward to this for so long, we have a very special guest. He's a great friend of mine. He's my writing partner. You've seen him do a million TV shows. He's in movies that I cannot mention right now. It's Bashir Salahuddin. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me, guys. This is fun. Excited to talk about music.
It's excited to talk about music. We're excited to talk about Prince.
Yeah.
And all right, before we get into the song Prince, I want to ask right off the bat, what makes Prince special to you?
You know, I think for me, I've always like, you know, for me, that's a great question. I'm sorry, because I was going to answer all the things that make him special, but that doesn't make sense.
No, but that works too.
But I'm saying everybody knows what makes him special. So to me, there are two things about him that I've always found really incredible. One is his work as a collaborator. A lot of it you've told me about. And I've always felt like if I was ever to do a Prince movie, like that's the one I'd want to do. Just about him. Because, I mean, just think about, he's so successful and so talented, but like there's still more in the tank. Right?
There's
still like, you know what? And I'm going to go produce six other albums for six other people. And I'm going to go play
guitar. I'm
going to
do this Vanity 6 album over here.
I'm going to drop some vocals on this person's record.
The family has an album that we got to get out. Tell us why you're so excited about the topic today.
I'm so excited because I have a lot of stuff I want to play for you guys that you may have never heard before. So many layers to Let's Go Crazy, beyond it being just an incredible pop song. There's layers of rock and roll. There's layers of heavy metal in there. There's synth pop. It's very, actually, when you drill down into the song, it's actually really very lo-fi in terms of its recording. It's, you know, even though it was a massive global hit, the actual recording itself was very punk rock, very DIY. So in my mind, this song is culturally important for all the reasons we know for Prince to be important. Mm-hmm. But as a song, it's also kind of an avant-garde, lo-fi, heavy metal, synth-pop, rock classic.
It's also, for a lot of people, his introduction to himself. I mean, it opens Purple Rain. There are
absolutely
folks, you know, if you had some, like, you know, black people who love funk and was really about it, they knew about, you know, for the first couple of Prince albums. But I think vast majority of America probably came on board of Purple Rain. And so this is like the first moment of like,
they weren't buying copies of Dirty Mind.
Yeah.
The guy standing in the bathtub.
No, that's right. It was kind of like, it was sort of like, if you were a kid, especially, it wasn't music you were allowed to listen to necessarily. Controversy. Mm-hmm. Like those are some, the controversial lyrics. Like
they're,
you said it right there, right in the title.
We were not supposed to watch the movie Purple Rain. And I was like watching it as a kid and I was like, what's wrong? Oh boy.
Well, this is,
I'm not supposed to be watching this right now.
Oh. That was my family too. This is the first song on Purple Rain. Let's get it started. This is One Song. Thanks to the U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Just like notes in a song, sustainable living is just a series of small eco-friendly choices that contribute to the melody. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
So a little backstory to the song. We just kind of alluded to it a moment ago, but this is the introduction to the world for a lot of people of Prince. But Prince was pretty well known in the black community. He was an R&B singer. He had four records out actually before this. And to be fair, he had a couple of huge pop records before this too, but he hadn't quite broken through in the way he was about to break through. And part of that was in the album Purple Rain in general, in the movie and the album, but specifically the song, there's an effort to kind of go a little deeper into the rock direction. Mm-hmm. And part of that is fueled, some interesting things happen a few years earlier, just to back up to 1981. Prince is opening for the Rolling Stones, just two shows in Los Angeles, and he actually can't even finish the set because they get booed off stage by this. And this is like, that's a moment where he's like, I never want to, first of all, tour in front of anyone else again.
He never opens again.
He never opens for anybody again. This is the beginning of his really locking the doors on who he's working with or opening for.
He wants to control the live experience.
The control, that's the word I was looking for. Absolutely. Yeah. The beginning of this
next
era.
And make sure that the fans
who
were there are his fans and not
he wanted
Rolling Stones fans.
And it wasn't just let's lock the doors.
We saw what happened at Altamont.
Black people don't do well at Rolling Stones concerts.
No, if you're black and Rolling Stones invite you to tour with them, to say no thank you, Mick Jagger.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this isn't closing the door, though, on that audience and saying, okay, it's only going to be these guys for now. And it's more like, how do I get those guys? How do I win them over? Mm-hmm. So there's a real effort to reach for the white audience. And in part, that means going rock. That means adding crunchy guitars. Literally that tactic.
Let me ask this question.
Call me out on
that. Do we feel like that's him saying, I got to reach a bigger audience, got to reach a... Or does it feel like him going deeper into all the stuff he really likes? I feel like when I hear narratives of Tina Turner... when she did her first album after was it Private Dancer?
Okay.
Is that what it's called? I don't know if that's the first
one. The big one where she broke? Yeah,
the big one was with Private Dancer.
What's Love Got to Do With It?
And when you look at Michael Jackson and the disco shift, right, from Off the Wall to Thriller.
Where he gets Eddie Van Halen.
The artists are saying like, hey, this is me going deeper into it. And I'm wondering if with Purple Rain, is it both? Is it outreach? Or is it also Prince saying, hey, I love all this other stuff too?
Or let's take it one step further. It might be Prince saying, hey, by the way, I'm better at rock than y'all are. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's an element of
I think
that
it's a little bit of all that. I think those are great points. I don't think he compromised his sound one bit. It's more like he's adding to the sound. There's already synth pop songs on like Dirty Mind is a synth pop classic as is, right? Controversy is kind of a synth pop. He's already kind of bringing in new wave, like British white band, basically. There's already an interplay in his music where he's mixing up different genres and different audiences.
So weird to hear you describe, really quickly, to hear you describe it as rock, which is accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we all receive it as pop.
Yeah.
We all received all that stuff. This is just pop music. It was on top 40 radio. It wasn't on like the rock station.
It seems like over time, the definition of pop always changes to what's ever truly popular because there are times in the past when pop was rock and then pop was hip hop for a little bit. And right now I would say like all that dance music that felt underground in the 2000s is, you know, basically what Dua Lipa and all the pop artists are doing now. They're just singing lyrics over it. One last thing I want to say about Prince doing rock. When the first British invasion happens, you get all these black artists, and we're going to talk about Little Richard as well this episode, but you get these people who are like black musicians who are like, hey, these British people are doing what we invented. Let's show them that we do it better.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like when, you know, Human League and all these people are basically doing the British,
right,
this British invasion is doing their own version of disco and black music, you know, with drum machines, and Prince is like, oh yeah, I can do that.
Yes, he can.
I can do that just like y'all. So
he can do it better than anyone else.
It's not even that he's copying the white musicians. He's saying like, hey, I'm a show you where this all came from.
Right. Well, and to be fair, this is also a moment where like whatever, a decade into, maybe it's longer than that, a period of time where there's so like top 40 radio is so eclectic. Mm-hmm. You have so much going on. white, black, country, rock. There's everything is sort of simultaneously listening to each other. It's not striated in the way it used to be. There used to be black stations and there used to be white
but
stations.
I think the other thing also that's, for me, very incredible that I've... It's one of those things like when you see certain artists are so good, you have to like think about them in retrospect mm-hmm. for all the different parts of them that were good because at the time you're just receiving it. Like it's interesting with Prince, as you say again, it was rock. I'm just sort of struggling with that idea a little bit because I'm like, it's so wild because he was also really good at writing really great original melodies, right? Like it didn't sound like
Let's Go Crazy has one of the greatest guitar riffs of all time.
Didn't sound like anything anybody had heard right. before. So it's like, I think that's the hardest thing in music. I think writing a pop melody.
Yeah,
that people who don't know you will be humming later is like, that's the golden standard. That's the hardest thing to do. And that's why most of us can't make music.
Okay, so really quick, you have the stems for this song, which is something that I've never had the chance to hear. What are you going to play for us first?
All right, so I do have the stems for Let's Go Crazy, so we can hear all the different parts. The first thing I want to start with, though, is the drums. So what's interesting and somewhat innovative about this is that we're going to start with a drum machine. Prince is really famous for being, as we were just discussing, a master programmer of specifically the LN1 drum machine. Like the LN1 is the iconic Prince drum okay. machine that he tamed and created sounds. Because you have to understand, you buy this device and it's got a preset kick, preset snare, got a hi-hat. And everyone who buys it, it sounds the same until you start getting in there and tweaking it. And at the time, people weren't really doing that because that was hard to do.
You have to address, and this is so a thing that's timeless in music. Yeah. You got to address the haters because you know some old musicians are like, man, he's pushing buttons.
Yes.
He's pushing buttons.
That's my take.
And we're here to go, no, this is genius.
Remember that point. I want you to make that point. Play us some drums real
quick. But we don't have that context anymore.
It's funny to hear it in the build, too, because you have to remember, we're going to be building from the ground up. So it starts simple, but that's for a reason. So here is literally the Lynn drum beat from Let's Go Crazy.
It almost could be from like 10 different Prince songs.
That is absolutely... It is from 10 different Prince songs.
Yeah, it feels like that's
it. It's the same drum machine. And that same...
But even the cadence feels like...
I'm delirious.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah. So he's not getting crazy with the patterns necessarily, but he is messing around with the sounds and that kind of infamous knocking beat. I'll play that isolated because this to me, like when you hear this, it exists in the drum machine, but to get it to sound like that, in other words, it's one of your sound options, but to get it to sound like
it's
Prince,
a pre-program.
You got to do stuff.
You got to pitch it down. You got to run it through a flanger. You got to compress it. And in order to do that in 1982, you got to be some kind of mad professor, basically.
But he was that guy, right? We talked about,
he was that guy.
You know, Dale and I had the luxury,
if you will,
of going to college with
Ryan. We have to mention his name three times in the show.
And I do appreciate that.
We had the luxury of going to college with Ryan Leslie. And I think one of the things that I, you know, aside from not studying, I was always so impressed with just because we got a chance to watch him make a few songs. And I would say with Prince, I've always heard, and I don't know, you probably know better, that he was kind of grew up with his own little garage situation, right? Where he was experimenting and playing with sounds and really learning
basement.
All this stuff.
In Manhattan, whatever you call it.
Kids, parents, buy your kids a bunch of like equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
and that comes in handy later when he's on tour with Rick James. We'll get into that story in a minute. But,
the beefiest tour in history, by the way.
but here, I just want to play for you that iconic Prince sound, because you and I have talked about it before.
Yes.
When you hear this isolated thing, that's Prince programming the drums, because he puts that specific sound.
He pitches it down.
He pitches it down.
He runs it through a flanger.
That's right.
I can hear it now.
And here it is in the mix again, just so you hear what that sounds like. That's a Prince beat when he throws that little blap, blap, crack, crack, whatever you want to call it.
You know, somebody once said that, like, the way that Prince made those drums sound so good, I've always said it killed off a generation of black drummers because, you know, I mean, like, you've got Ndugu Chancellor, who plays, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right,
Billie Jean,
like, to iconic perfection. Who's the guy? Was it Benny Benjamin?
Who was in the
Funk Brothers. Okay. Like, you know, you had all these black guys who had been playing the drums.
Clyde Stubblefield.
Yes. Oh, exactly.
James Brown.
Of course. And all of a sudden, you know, because I'm a kid of the 80s, all of a sudden, because of the timing and because of the technology and just the appreciation I feel like our generation had for, like, the 808, like, we kind of I personally preferred this sound. You know, nowadays, like, I love the imperfections that I hear. Yeah. And you and I are both drummers. But I love the imperfection that you hear from a live drummer. But, like, man, like Bashir was just saying, there had to be people over here at the record plant or like Sunset Studios,
man,
like,
cut that off.
Right.
Hey, man, cut off that mist.
But you know what's interesting too?
they were mad at AI before writers were mad at AI.
Yeah. I think it does both. I think it kills off some careers, but it also forces others to evolve.
Yes.
I'm thinking of that famous drum beat, because I did a deep dive on this one night when I was, you know, not parenting. And I the drum beat from 777.
That's Morris.
So I thought that was, it's Morris.
But it's Morris,
I thought it was a live drummer. It was original. That drum beat, according to the internet, according to the guy who played it, was actually pre-programmed into the machine by the guy who made the machine as like a crazy beat that nobody could ever do.
Really? Okay. I believe you.
Listen, the comments will say everything.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I watched the video on YouTube. But apparently, he programmed that in. But then the guy who plays for Morris, is his name Jelly Bean? Right.
Yeah.
He learned that.
Wow.
And they were like, "You playing it?" He was playing it live.
Oh,
so
dope.
I think for some drummers, the drum machine made them step their game up.
Let me tell you, I just found out today while prepping for this episode that the drums on Wanna Be Starting Something are just a drum machine. Mm. So sometimes when I thought it was a live drummer, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, and also I found out the drummer from Toto does a lot of the drumming on the Thriller album.
Well, there's
album,
a lot of Toto really on the Thriller album because there was a lot of songwriting from Thriller too.
And Eddie Van Halen's on there. There are a lot of weird people in that studio. That's another episode.
You know, it's kind of funny we're talking about this either or thing with regards to drum machines versus live drummers, because in this song, in Let's Go Crazy, what he's doing, which is pretty innovative, is he's mixing that Lynn that we were just listening to with Bobby Z playing live drums. And check this out. I'll play it for you in a moment. But what you're about to hear is Bobby Z, the drummer for The Revolution, playing live drums, but it's a combination of, you know, drums that you're used to and triggering another Lynn drum. So when he hits a snare, it's actually the sound of this. It's crazy how complicated this is in 1983, no less.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the result.
The olden times.
The olden times.
I was
times.
There. I saw
Oldie
it.
1983.
The British had just invaded the Falklands.
It was horrible.
And this is recorded, by the way, one last crazy step at a rehearsal. This is so unprofessional. Like, there's not. This is super punk DIY. Yeah. So as you can hear, they're playing it live in the studio. It's also got like the Lynn drum playing, which they're playing too.
Yeah.
And in the mix, here's all of the drums on "Let's Go Crazy" together. I've obviously fussed with the levels,
you know,
a little bit.
Even hearing that, though, it just reminds me that the one thing that music and writing kind of have in common is sometimes you come up with an interesting idea and you don't know where it goes yet. And I definitely think when you hear, you know, Purple Rain, you're hearing probably 10 years, right? 15 years of things that he's like, oh, that's, he came up with that 6 years ago and he didn't tell anybody. One day I'm going to figure out where that goes, right? Now it's like, it all comes together. And if you're lucky, you're print. How old was he when they were like 22 or something, 24? That might be a sweet spot for some musicians. That 24, 25.
Creativity's all downhill
from
there.
That means it will be great in about 2 more years.
Yeah.
Young guys here.
But it's just so crazy because I know that now there's so many parts of great art that didn't all come at the same time.
Right, You just kind of carry it with you till the right moment.
And one thing
and
about
go,
this
oh,
show,
I know it goes here.
Yeah.
One thing that I like about our show is that by hearing these individual sections in part, you realize that it's never just one thing. There's so many layers of things that have to go well for it to kind of work out. And there are a lot of people playing on that. I want to talk about The Revolution.
Let's talk about The Revolution.
Can you explain who The Revolution was and why did Prince form a band? I mean, like, I remember his first album, For You, I think is the title. Like, there's no real... It just says Prince. Mm. But by Purple Rain, it's Prince of The Revolution.
Right.
Why did Prince form a band and how did they change the sound?
So there's a lot of like information about this out there. We don't really know what Prince's thinking was at the time, but I will say that knowing that he was a huge fan of Sly and the Family Stone,
yes,
and a huge fan of Fleetwood Mac, I think
both
that,
multi-gender groups.
Yeah, as he was piecing
both multicultural. Well, not Fleetwood Mac, but right. But Sly is notably like my brother's
important
a huge
point,
Sly fan. He was like
drummer, right?
It's or such a they had a
keyboard.
White drummer.
A white
that
drummer,
was crazy.
They had
player.
A woman as the keyboarder. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
I saw it on the Questlove documentary.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All I was going to say was that it's Sly is, you know, especially for a generation, it's that group that was multicultural.
Yeah.
And the fact that they had people on sort of unorthodox instruments for the stereotype of those instruments had a lot to do with
Prince.
Oh, and
I get the sense that growing up, like looking back, I wasn't there at the time, but it feels a little bit like they were the coolest band of 1971. I just get the sense that what they were doing musically, because it was so influential.
It was exciting. It was exciting for those who were there.
And it was bringing together elements of rock and funk and pop. So it's a lot of the DNA that Prince later takes. And by the way, I've been to Paisley Park, and there's a giant mural on the wall of all of his heroes, and he's got Sly and the Family Stone is up there, and he's got Joni Mitchell up there.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Carlos Santana. Some of these were surprises even to me. But Fleetwood Mac
Shaka
is up there,
on the
too.
Wall? Did Shaka make the wall?
Oh, good question. I got to look that one up. I wouldn't be surprised, because clearly...
Shaka Khan?
Yeah.
They're not contemporaries?
She's they are, but he loved... I mean, like, he absolutely loved them. There are certain people who he always came back to.
I still love Shaka.
Me too.
I know she watches this podcast.
No, she listens. I ran into her. I was behind her in line at Fatburger. About 3 years ago, and she promised me that she was going to call me back, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Shaka has a long history of hearing guys say,
"You were not
call
the first."
Me back, and she just goes, "Okay, yeah,
yeah, yeah, I'll call you."
All right. Yeah, she told me she was going to call me. I told Bashir, I was like, oh, "I think
he
I got
did.
Shaka."
He was like, oh, you don't believe what I met at Fatburger? I was like,
"No, I believe you.
This story should better not be Shaka Khan."
I'm like, man, you take the joke out of all
it's
my punchlines.
It's so interesting. I know you guys do this in pieces, but even as you were talking, I was like, it's so crazy that both Sly, both Prince take all these elements, have all these influences, and yet it's still unutterably black, right? It still has this one last layer of filtering through, and it's almost a vibe of like, the streets are going like this. Because you know, for both of those guys, like that,
it was
the
important.
Streets had to like it. Like,
it was important for them to have that credibility. I love where this conversation is going. There's so much to touch on. But when we come back, Prince's vocals in the Raw are not easy to come by. But after the break, you will hear his isolated voice as we go deeper into Let's Go Crazy. We'll be right back. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this episode of One Song and for giving our podcast studio an unbelievably smooth, sustainable makeover. Here on our show, we dive deep into the music, dissecting every beat and lyric. Sustainability is just like that. Each eco-friendly choice we make is like a single note that contributes to life's melody. That's why Heartbeat and the USB are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets. To see our sustainable studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to One Song. Okay, there are so many funny stories about Prince out there, so much lore. Luxury, do you have a personal Prince story?
Well, I don't have a personal Prince story because I've never met the man. Okay. I wish I had, but I mean, one what popped to mind as we were discussing the whole like Prince being a master at like programming machines, like that's a part of him not everybody knows about. So there's a funny story that I heard attached to that because he was touring with Rick James and the Stone City Band and the Prince and they were
this tour is crazy.
This tour is crazy. It's like, can you imagine getting to see both of those bands?
I've never heard anybody actually say they were at this tour.
Somebody had to be in that tour.
Somebody was on. Sure, somebody was buying lots of tickets, and apparently every night they were competing.
Every night they're competing, and like it's a very fierce competition to get the most applause, to get the most audience reaction. So at the end of the tour, apparently Prince's synths that he'd been using the whole time go missing. They're just gone. And Prince is, you know, like, what the fuck happened to my synth? So months go by, and he gets a note. One day they arrive, just like a box arrives with like his keyboards. And again, the value of Prince's keyboards is that they contain Prince's sounds.
Yeah.
So
the presets he's made for himself.
Dialed in his very specific Princey sounds from, like, you know, 1999 or Controversy, I guess would have been the album at the time.
Oh, I think I know where the story's going.
So, by the way, it says on, there's a note that says, thanks, motherfucker. And it turns out that Rick James had used the keyboards to program and play on the song Super Freak.
She's a very kinky girl.
So when you hear that sound, this distinctive synth sound on Super Freak, it is actually Prince's presets.
That's
that
Prince playing, technically?
It's not. It's almost as though Prince, it's like an interpolation.
Right.
Nice.
Or perhaps.
But it's like he dialed it in to sound like that.
He dialed it in to sound like that.
That's wild. Bashir, you have a
really quick Prince story. There was a late, you know, so one of the things about Prince that I always appreciated was that if you live in the LA area, like, he would just show up places.
Yes.
Like, you'd be like out at like Soul House or something. And it was like, by the way, whoever's playing piano sounds really good. And oh my God. So, but even before that, this is way before that, there was a party in LA called Kiss and Grind. It's now our good friend Craig does it. But back in the day, it was a cool ass underground party downtown.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget one night. It's a room, maybe it's a little bit bigger than this, and it was packed full of people. It was so cool. It was so, like, you know, underground. And I'll never forget one night I was in there and I was looking this way, talking to my friend. All of a sudden, everybody here did like this. And when I looked this way, it was like he was a ghost. Crazy. Walked in, and as he walked, every single person
made space.
No, they got quiet. And as soon as he passed, they were like,
which to our listeners, Bashir's going crazy right now. That's why.
But like, they did it quiet, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you can't make any noise.
And it's one of those moments you go like, oh, that's what a star is.
Oh, let me tell you.
You learn what a real star
is. I mean,
is.
When I first moved out here, I think he still had a place open called the Glam Slam. It was towards downtown.
Oh, wow.
And he was never there. But I have a story that's kind of similar to that. So one time I walked into a place on Cahuenga called The Room. I think y'all know it.
Oh, I know it well.
I walked in and I was waiting to see like the typical, it's a real dive hole in the baller type place, but they always used to play good music. I don't know if they still do, but I walked into the room and I feel like this sounds a little bit like someone else's prison story, but there was a girl sitting at the bar dressed all in yellow. And I was like, oh, she's kind of cute. And she had a big bodyguard with her. And then I looked the second time. I was like, oh, shit, that's Prince. I was like, damn, Prince is mad cute. Very small individual. No, here's my real Prince story, though. This one still eats me up to this day. I went to the Roosevelt Hotel with my friend Azizi, who Bashir knows.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there because we heard Prince was going to perform by the pool. And then we heard he was going to be in the ballroom. So everybody left the pool and went to the ballroom. And I was there. I had work in the morning. I was there till probably 2:15 in the morning. I told Zia, I was like, I can't stay up anymore. I'm going to be asleep at work. I'm leaving. Woke up the next day to text messages. And this is like in the early days of the iPhone. Oh, so like when people send videos, like them shits is grainy. But he was Prince just got him on stage. Message from 3:15.
Yeah.
3:30. He's doing all Michael Jackson covers.
What?
He just did Don't Stop Till You Get Enough and Wanna Be Started Something with his band. I was like, damn you, Prince.
That's why you have such bad FOMO nowadays.
Yeah, I do. I missed out on when Daft Punk brought that. I went to every Coachella.
I saw him at Coachella too.
Until 2006. And then the first time I didn't go, people were like, oh, we know Daft Punk is coming. I'm like, eh, I'm a little soft on that new album. They brought out the pyramid.
Yeah,
and to this day, musicologists like you point to that performance as the year and the performance specific that broke dance music wide in America. I have serious FOMO.
I have a feeling something's going to happen for you soon. Just keep.
I just got to keep going to every show and stay out till 4 in the morning every night.
I'm sure
my kids will appreciate that.
That's why I saw Prince at Coachella, and I remember that's when I realized I was getting older because we had VIP tickets and everything, and he was great.
What year is this?
I don't know.
2008.
I'm going to roughly say it was 11 to 12 years
ago. This way you did Creep. You did that Radiohead Creep cover.
I was going to say that me and my friend, who you know, Felicia, we were there, and we were both like, do we want to watch more Prince or do we want to beat this traffic? And we were both like, I kind of want to beat the traffic. And what I heard on the way home was, I was like, nah, he's not playing Creep. That's impossible. There's no way he's playing.
Bashir being a huge Radiohead fan.
And I was like, oh, I should say.
It's just like your name.
Me and Bashir used to share an apartment in the ghettos of Hollywood. I'd be like,
not too far from here. But
just to tell you, that 7-Eleven was raunchy at 3:15 in the morning.
My dogs, man.
I didn't ever really get into Radiohead as much as Bashir, but I know living with Bashir was listening to a lot of OK Computer.
Yeah, man.
And okay. And the album that I really did actually like, which was Kid A. We should do a Kid A. Kid we should bring you back best. For the Kid A album. Luxury, you're a musician. Can I ask you, going back to that Rick James thing, what's the craziest outfit that you've ever worn to try and win people over? Have you ever done ruffles?
I did not see that coming. For some reason, what just flashed to me was a Halloween when it was like in the 90s when there was the whole kind of supermodel thing was happening. Mm-hmm. And there was this idea of like a waist.
That's the only decade that we had supermodels. Let's be clear.
That's right. Ahead. It came and it went very quickly.
Yeah.
But in that moment, the Kate Moss thing was all about the word waif existed for about 6 months in popular vernacular.
Heroin chic.
Heroin chic, waif. And so I was a waif and I had like a feather boa and I was like, you know, dressed in some female garb that I borrowed from my friend. That flashed in my head, and I had not thought about it since it happened. So it's all going down right here on one song.
We are finding
Proustian
out things
Madeleine
about each other.
Moments, if you will.
Let's keep it going, Luxury. What is next?
So we were talking before about like how there's a lot of surprises inside the song. One of them to me when I first heard it was I thought I maybe had turned up something too loud because it didn't sound right, but it's actually the bass guitar really does sound like this, and you're going to be very surprised. Now, just between you and me, I would call that like disgusting in a good way. Like
no,
that is a distorted, dirty bass.
That's
right
Brown
there.
Mark, right? That is
Brown Mark on bass. Exactly
right. Brown Mark on bass.
You must know there must have been some. Again, looking at because we never think about the con. There must have been some older engineers that were like, "What is this?"
Yeah. Well, you know,
I clean that bass up for you in 2 seconds. What are you doing? You know, and it's like, no, I want it like that.
I'm
and
sorry. They're like, do you remember the editor we worked on
oh
on our
God,
first pilot?
Yes, yeah.
We hired this guy.
Easy, slow down.
We hired this editor because he had worked on some of our favorite movies as kids. But the challenge there was that
he had his same equipment from when he made those movies
from like Airplane 1980.
It was very slow.
we were like, hey, can we cut the tail off of that joke? He's like, whoa,
easy.
I'm
all
gonna
right,
need
hold
an
on.
Hour.
Tick tick tick. God, all right, you're happy. You're like, okay. This
it's
is
so funny
on.
When you think about how film and TV is edited now. We had to like give him notes and leave for 2 days and hope that he would remember all those things. Now, hilarious. That's a dirty bass.
Yeah, no, you're that's nailing it, though, with that question about the engineer, because a big part of the Prince story sort of begins on this record. He starts to work with this woman named Susan Rogers, who for the next few years becomes his absolute confidant. This woman who actually wasn't herself an engineer. She was trained in actually getting the engineering aspects of a studio together, but not being an engineer. Mm-hmm. And he really
is that because he wanted to kind of quietly be the engineer? Is
well,
that what that is?
He wanted someone he could trust. Mm-hmm. And so he met her a few times and just got a vibe about her. And one day called her out of the blue and said, come over. Like he's not giving a lot of instructions. Just come over. And when she arrived, she learned that her job that day was to help Prince record a song. She didn't expect that at all. It wasn't her forte. It wasn't something she'd done before. But because he had seen something in Susan Rogers that he trusted, and that was the beginning of a long working relationship that includes the Purple Rain album, Around the World in the Day, like all the way through, I think, Parade. And a big part of that is the trust, exactly what you're talking about. She wasn't somebody who was going to judge what he was doing. He wanted to have the freedom to feel like he could experiment by himself and like make mistakes and not be embarrassed or be called out, like you said.
Yeah. I want to hear the guitar because I don't think that in the Pantheon, you always hear, you know, especially guys who are rock guys of a certain age. I feel like Prince doesn't come up in their conversations enough as one of the best guitarists of all time. And when I think about the guitar, I especially think about that guitar solo at the end. I don't even know how pop radio and black radio, like, how long is the guitar solo? It's a long guitar solo. I want to hear the guitar solo. I want you to tell me about it after we hear it.
Okay, we're going to get into all that stuff. And if you like that distorted crunchiness, you're going to love the guitars because there's even more going on here. And specifically with Susan Rogers, this was the beginning of his working relationship with Prince, was recording the guitars you're about to hear. Here's the second of three guitar tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So now let me play all of that for you together in the mix. This is all the guitars and the bass together on Prince's Let's Go Crazy. Or is it a Metallica song? One thing I love about delving into this is that as we go from section to section, it is such a balancing act. Because so far, we were just balancing the drums, the Lynn drum and the live drum. And now we've just heard a really pretty heavy set of guitars. But the next section we're going to get to after we can talk about this, but after we get to is the synths, and things start to get balanced out. And that's the crazy vision that Prince had, that all of these things in the mix, there wouldn't be anything that was too much of one.
I really want to hear the guitar solo at the end of the song.
Oh, yeah, we have to play that. There we go.
I mean, come on, man.
Oh, God.
I don't play the guitar. I don't ever really hear anything that makes me want to play the guitar, but I hear that and I wish I could play the guitar.
It's so tasty.
It also feels like a message, too. Like, again, you know, we're isolating it, but in the context of American pop music, you know, there's people try to diminish you, right? So the people say, like, well, he's just a pop artist, and yeah, he used some elements. Prince is going, no, like, fuck you. I can actually shred like Jimi Hendrix.
I
like,
just blew Motley Crue out of the water.
Got rid of all those people. Yeah. Now what are you going to say? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, it's almost like when Drake sings sometimes. It's like, yeah, I can write raps, but I can also sing. So I can be on the pop chart and the hip-hop chart at the same time. Now what are you going to say?
I mean, that's right. I just think that's... When I think about guitar solos, like, I know I'm supposed to say certain artists, but I always think about that guitar solo.
Okay, so the next part I want to play is all the keyboards. There's a lot of synths going on in the song, and I was talking before about the balance. This is the balancing act. For all those crunchy guitars, we have a lot of surprisingly dinky, I'm going to use the word. That's not a very technical word, but it always strikes me as dinky, some of the synths in here. I think you'll agree once you hear them. It's dinky.
You know what's interesting? It's almost baseball.
Yeah. Sounds right? Like a baseball.
You're right.
It's almost like a baseball.
Coming up to bat in 1983, Dale
crazy.
Murphy.
Yes,
I know who that is.
That's for the Braves. Shout out to Mike Stein, who's a big Braves fan. Yeah. Listen, that's Lisa, right? From Wendy and Lisa playing
that's
that.
Lisa Coleman on keyboards.
Yeah.
Some of them might be Prince, actually. So some Prince,
oh, okay.
some Lisa.
Yeah,
I'm
always
not sure
assume
which.
That yeah. it's Lisa. I won't diminish these musicians. But I just know how, like, genius artists are.
Yeah.
They will smooth do that shit themselves in the studio, but then when you see them on stage, everybody's sharing in the duties. But it's nice to hear that he did have his musicians. But I know sometimes I'm like, well, I'm just going to do it.
I have to give a shout out to this incredible book where I got a lot of my facts from. There's this guy called Dwayne Tudall, and he has this book where it's a 400-page book documenting every day in Prince's life from 1983 to 1984.
Questlove swears by this.
And
thing.
There's a second edition I just bought, which is 85 to 86. Mm. But in this book, he's documenting, and he's gone back into he's talked to Susan Rogers, who I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's gone into the archives. He's looked at all the tapes. There's a degree to which from that archival research, we can kind of know a little bit about what happened, but there's still some mysteries. We do know that the live stuff that I showed you before, the drums and the bass and the guitar, that was all recorded by the band in a rehearsal space. Mm-hmm. But we also know then he went into the studio with Susan to do some overdubs. So to your point, we don't know what got kept and what got replaced.
It's not about dissing the musicians he works with. It's just about understanding the perfectionism of a really great artist and knowing that deep down, I mean, they just want to like, I'll just do it. You know?
I've got a perfect example coming up because if you remember, by the way, I should point out that the version of the song that's recorded, when you listen to the recording, it's 4 minutes long, but everyone who's seen the movie knows that
it's long.
There's a 7-minute song.
Yeah.
And the recording itself is actually 7 minutes. They just cut it down for
radio.
There's that whole
thing that Prince does at the keyboard.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. In the movie, you'll see Prince jump in on the keyboards playing this, frankly, hilarious piano solo, which I freaking love.
Yeah, it's frantic.
I'm going to play it for you for a second. Here's a little bit of this crazy, frantic solo in the middle.
Yeah, that's it. It's crazy.
He has a couple songs where he does that on. He does it on, hold on.
It's like a ragtime.
Yeah, I was just going to say this sounds like.
Scott Joplin. So this is actually
Can I hear that with the instrumentation over it?
Oh, yeah. You mean just the whole song?
Yeah. Okay. But that part of the song. Because you can hear it in the mix.
Now I'll play that in the mix. And it's a little less crazy in the mix, but still a little crazy.
Like, this is the Wario version of the song.
The Bizarro Superman version.
Yeah, he understands the complementary nature of those sounds, right? Like, it does not sound to me cacophonic at all.
No, it's not.
It sounds like, no, that goes together.
That totally works.
It's like a palate cleanser in the middle of a song.
But to your point, that's actually Matt Fink playing that keyboard solo. Mm. But in the movie, Prince likes it so much, he's like, I'm going to make sure the world thinks it's me.
He walked over and does that, right?
Yes.
No, but what he's saying is that that's not actually Prince playing it, even though Prince is...
No, I'm saying in the movie, he walks over.
Yeah. What is that, finger syncing it?
Yeah, yeah, he's finger syncing
it. He comes over to the keyboard and does that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should talk about Minneapolis here, because I am a Prince disciple. I think the man is an absolute genius, but I think there are so many solid, solid people working with him.
Yeah.
You know, like, because if you look at their resumes, like, the most obvious examples are Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, who work with Flight Time and Time, Morris Day, you know, like, you know.
There's something about, this might not be your
just
point.
Real quick, Dr. Fink goes on to work with a lot of fucking really successful bands afterwards. Right. And there's some freaking brilliance there, too. I think, you know, to me, and we'll get into it later about, like, you know, what's your favorite Prince album? But I will say right here, of his bands, New Power Generation, some of the other ones, the things that came before, I think it takes nothing away from Prince to say that the Revolution had some freaking heavy hitters.
I've heard people describe the Revolution as the Mount Rushmore of Prince's
Prince if you
fans.
Have to rank his bands or whatever, like...
It's Wendy, Lisa,
Purple Rain. We'll Brown get into Mark, Purple Rain on another episode, but like the Wendy and Lisa Purple Rain is well documented.
Mm. But it's interesting you bring up Minneapolis, Diallo, because I also feel like there's another thing, which is the other thing about Prince I find really interesting, and he shares it with a lot of black folks, including somebody he went on tour with. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, places that you don't usually identify with black folks tend to put out some of the blackest. I'm thinking about the Gap Band in Tulsa.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Rick James in Buffalo.
Yep.
Prince's in Minneapolis. These are not places
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
But even
in Seattle.
But even think about, I was even thinking about like Timbaland in Virginia. Like Virginia is a very black place.
Well, we did
like,
a whole episode about all the black people came out of Virginia.
But you don't think of it as, when I was coming up, Virginia was not on the short list of cities that you would list as places that great black
people. Yeah, Virginia's got Timbo
from.
And Pharrell.
So anyway,
and
the point is all so you many. Black people who are in like, Peoria,
Nebraska.
Illinois.
If you're in Nebraska and you feel all alone,
if you're in
music.
Wyoming, that's somebody already there. If you're in South Dakota and you're black, you need to be making music.
Just start making
I think
music.
You got something special.
Get to Butte. Get to the town of Butte.
Butte, North Dakota.
That's North Dakota. But you know what? If you're near Butte, get out of Whitefish. Go to Butte and start your own.
That's
First
Montana.
Avenue.
But if you're in Whitefish, Montana,
I don't know. I would
need
I'm
to
public
go
school.
And make some music.
Okay, so this last piece is the vocals. And I'm so excited about this because I want to hear Prince's raw, untreated vocals.
Okay, so let's get into the vocals on Let's Go Crazy. I'm going to start with some of the iconic Prince intro stuff that you normally hear with the organ behind it. Here it is for the first time on radio.
Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld.
Can we get into the singing? I think we probably want to hear the singing.
Let's get into some singing.
You see, I call my old lady for a friendly word. She just picked up the phone, dropped it on the floor. Was all I heard.
I mean,
I don't know who wants to go first, but my God, go ahead.
So this is one of those things where you hear a song forever and never actually listen to the real lyrics. Is he saying he called up his girl and then she dropped the phone and somebody was in there smashing? Is that
no? I think she started masturbating.
Oh,
she got so into what he was. Talking
I assumed
about.
It was
that was my interpretation.
Yeah,
too.
It was another guy.
I think
there.
That she or picked girl. Up the phone, dropped on the floor because she was having sex. That's what I read.
Oh, I thought Prince just turned her on.
Guys, if anybody was around Prince when he was recording that line,
August 7th, 1983,
or is somebody getting boned? Let us know.
Also, let us know who Biggie was having sex with while he was
who
playing against the Utah
on the
Jazz.
Knicks was dating a girl. Yes, I want to know which
we
Nick player
know this. This is a
girlfriend
recurring.
Hooked up with Biggie Smalls.
Call the number on your screen.
That
right
should be
now.
The other show let we should know. Do. Hip Hop Mysteries.
Fifth caller gets a T-shirt.
Hip Hop Mysteries.
Hip Hop Mysteries.
The question is hip hop is never answered. I think he sounds amazing. Can I hear one part in particular?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I hear at the very end of the guitar solo? I'm pretty sure he says "Take Me Away," but I want to hear that part.
Okay.
Untreated, just because that always sounded so guttural.
You know what? I take requests on this show, so let's do that.
Take me away!
Woo! That'll wake you up in the morning.
Well, that actually point, one of the two things as I was listening, I wanted to say, number one is how distorted it is. That is not a perfectly...
No, he's on the microphone like that.
That is not a professionally engineered vocal in any sense of the word, nor were the guitars we heard, nor were the drums. This is a very lo-fi, cheap production, but that is so freaking cool.
But it's
punk rock of him.
But it's intentional. And
it's
again,
intentional.
You have to have the context of what was everybody else doing. I think the thing about artists I love is that they're always looking around going, everything around me sucks. And let me show you why. That's the motivation. So he's hearing all this clean ass music, all this perfection, and he's going, I can make a pop song. It has muddy vocals, distortion, you know, that you have keyboards that in the middle of it, there's like a ragtime Charlie, you know,
what's
his name, Scott Joplin vibe going on. And yet it's still like number one pop record on the planet.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's
and we're going to get into that because I want to talk about this song's place in music at the time and ask some questions about what we see again. Mm. Before we move on from vocals, can we hear, I think you said that there's some female vocals underneath Prince.
Let me play that for you. First, the other thing, by the way, the other point I just wanted to quickly make was as we were listening to that, I had this kind of feeling of like it being intrusive. Like as we were listening to Prince, like I felt his vulnerability because I kind of pictured him alone in the studio. He's made everyone leave, you know?
Yeah.
He's closed the door. Susan Rogers, this new engineer who he's just decided to trust, is also not looking at him because that's a big thing. He made sure no one was looking at him. And I really felt that as we heard his isolated vocal, this sort of frightened artist, not frightened, but like, you know, vulnerable artist is the right word.
But I think that, you know, just to close out this conversation, I think, again, one of the things I really love about doing this show is that you realize that no matter how big a song is, no matter how, you know, famous a singer is, at the end of the day, he had to go into that studio.
Yeah.
And lay down a vocal.
Yeah.
And that's where all creativity starts, is that at some point it's nothing and then it's something. And it's not just Prince on the track. Female vocals, I hear some, I actually heard some bleed in his headphones while he was singing. I feel like Whitney and Lisa are probably on the
song. Yeah, there's some really fun moments with them doing some harmonies.
Let's hear that real quick.
Let's listen to them.
Are we gonna let the elevator break us down? Oh no, let's go!
I hear how much fun they're having,
too. By the way, that sounds like Blitzkrieg Pop. I love that they were bringing so many different stuff.
They just brought, like, they weren't like, you
That's like Ramones, you know?
They're not like these, like, Diana Ross perfection singers.
Not at all.
But they're just, like, the right vibe. And it's the right. It's one of those things I think about when I think about, like, Kanye West telling Jamie Foxx like how to sing on slow jams, right? And Jamie tells the story about he's doing all this stuff, and Kanye's like, no, just you kind of just want to keep it really simple here because this is what hip hop is. And I just loved it with this version, Prince and Whitney. At least you know some again, some old ones, and it was like, ah, look, I could get you Carole King. Okay, I know Carole King. She'll come in, she'll do the vocal. And he's like, no, this is I want this.
Yeah,
they want
the imperfection, and it brings
this
in,
is the sound I'm doing.
We've heard literally the lo-fi recording. We've heard the big crunchy guitars, and we hear the imperfect vocals. And part of it aesthetically is he's, by the way, we've just had punk rock come in, and we just had new wave and post-punk. He's obviously listening to that. He's a big fan of the B-52s. We had those dinky little synths before. Those could have been B-52s synths. We could have had Fred Schneider on vocals.
Yeah.
It's same, like, lo-fi.
Let's go crazy. Let's get nuts.
You know Fred be in the shower tearing that song up to this baby. He should have had me on the song. Let's go.
So we've heard many different parts of this song, all the different parts, and how it equaled to something that was greater than those parts. But now I want to take a big step back and just talk about Prince the artist and his legacy. I mean, he has so many records, so much music. Right off the bat, I just kind of want to ask you, Bashir, what's your favorite Prince album?
That is a good question. It probably has to be. It's probably Purple Rain. Now, tonight on the way home, I'll be like, oh, no, it was
Sign of the Times.
Love Sexy. But I'm so impressed that, again, I think the hardest thing in music is writing a pop melody. I think it is both the quickest way to be successful, but it's also so out of reach. And there are some people who, after a time in their career, they can't do it anymore. They try, they just can't. And so anytime somebody has an album, Prince has this, Michael has this. I think back then they demanded it more. Where 95% of the album could be your single, that's rare. You don't have that nowadays. Like nowadays,
Listen,
it's two tracks you love,
yeah,
and the rest you kind of feel like
there's always
there
some
are no duds on this. There's always not a single dud on Purple Rain.
Don't put this out.
I've been saying for a long time. By the way, I think the answer to the question for me is Purple Rain,
and me too,
and yours.
Yeah, it's simple.
So now I kind of want to ask an incendiary question, because anytime I come across an album that I feel is pretty perfect, I think some albums are just perfect. I think Nas is Illmatic is kind of perfect.
I mean,
when it comes to Purple Rain,
yeah, it's true.
You gotta lose one song.
Oh, gee, okay, so painful,
freaking painful, but. Let's go down the line. So the songs on Purple Rain are Let's Go Crazy, Take Me With You, The Beautiful Ones, Computer Blue, Darling Nikki, When Doves Cry,
All Right,
I Would an Die For You, Baby I'm a Star, Purple Rain.
You haven't named a dud yet,
Listen. We go into this conversation not saying that any of these songs are bad, but we are being forced to lose one. Bashir, what is your choice?
It's going to have to be Darling Nikki, because I remember.
I knew a girl named Nikki. I guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not...
First off, y'all, there's no good answers. They're all...
I didn't say
unmovable.
That. That was luxury.
Luxury, there's no good answers. Y'all sounded like... Y'all been doing this show so long. I just heard, what? I was like, that's Diallo doubting me. That's Diallo.
He just
Ritter.
Met me. I mean, we've never been in the same room before.
No, I would just say it's got to be Darling Nikki, because that is... That's the one that I remember was like, you couldn't listen to it because your parents were like, you better not listen to that song. But I would also say that as beautiful and perfect as it is, I don't think I listen to that as much as the other stuff.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Luxury, what's yours?
Can I just counter that with one? I want to try to win you back to my side, because just listen. You may not
have
noticed
it. It's an amazing song, by the way. We're not arguing if it's incredible. It's incredible.
I'm sure you know the song inside and out, but just listen. The drums at the end. Just listen to the drums at the end. Fucking heavy metal drumming right there. Wait, hold on.
Then it also goes to that reverse part too, right?
Listen to this. That's fucking... Yeah!
But let me say what, though. Just since we're being extra critical, Diallo, it takes a long time to get to that part. Right? They don't start with that.
Fair enough. I hear you. Was that your answer?
It has to be, because it's sort of like... You can't pick anything else.
What about your
response? Yeah. Well, you know, we're almost out of time, so let's move on to the next section. We've talked.
Wait, what's your answer? What's your answer?
Now that you guys are on record, let's close this one out.
Now that you're on record, that's hating Prince.
I'm just kidding. on a serious note, for Prince's legacy, the thing that I really love about Prince,
what song would you draw, bro?
He's really not going to answer this question.
Oh, no. I'll answer in a second. I'm going to get there.
I'll be right back.
I'm going to get there. For me, the thing that I love about Prince so much is, and I was thinking about this, even if Little Richard is, you know, the inventor of rock and roll, if you have to single it down to one person, I truly do believe that. I think there's so much that we take for granted about rock and roll and rhythm and blues that we directly link to one guy, which is insane when you dig deep. The king of rock and roll, as he used to say.
Hell yeah.
You know, by the way, he would say, there is no Prince without the king.
Yes.
And Prince notably stayed away from throwing his name in his list of influences, which is interesting.
He probably had a personality.
I think there was some personality stuff happening there. But I will say this. The thing I love about Prince is that, I don't think we'll ever see another person like him again. I also just really appreciate, as a person who appreciates so many different types of music, that I can listen to rock Prince. I can listen to slow jam R&B Prince, like the one who did Damn You, which is basically just a real slow R&B song.
Yeah. Black
Album Prince. Yeah. I actually do really appreciate Diamond and Pearls Prince.
Can you do the Bat Dance?
I would never do the Bat Dance, but I like the Bat Dance a lot, and I think that Shaun of the Dead was wrong. I think that's actually a very good album, and maybe you had to be there for it.
was that one of the ones he was like?
he's like, hey, you can't throw Prince. He's like, this is Bat Dance. He's like, toss it.
What was the Janet Jackson one? Was it the Velvet Rope? I like the Velvet Rope.
Velvet Rope's an amazing album.
That's great. Anytime, any place.
The British, they were already off onto Oasis and Blur.
Well, that's the joke, right?
But shout out to Edgar Wright. Why
he's had he's control buddy. Of the Velvet Rope. Velvet Rope.
That's insane. Watch Shaun of the Dead, folks.
What a great
the thing
inside
that I
baseball.
Love...
I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say about Prince is that he opened up the format, like the fact that Let's Go Crazy is 192 BPMs.
Yeah.
96 if you want to have it and get into the DJ technicalness of that. Yeah. Like, you know, it's extremely fast. And the fact that he could do all these different types, and everybody accepted it. It's like, oh yeah, that's Prince. He's basically, you know, an R&B slash pop artist.
Yeah.
Like, that means so much to me. And I always wonder, will we see another person who can skate across all these other genres effectively and in the same way? I feel like nowadays people in their own unique way are more constricted.
Well, here's the thing, right? So back in the day, as with our field of television, you had to fight. There was three channels.
Mm-hmm.
So there was basically, you know, a bloodbath to get on those three channels. Now there are infinite channels between streaming, traditional, and the internet.
I think we have a fast channel somewhere.
The point I'm making is that you, again, I'm a broken record on this, but you got to consider context. Prince is looking at Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
In his brain, knowing how good he is, there's only one human being on this planet. Oh, maybe better than me. He probably couldn't even say the word, right? But Michael's out there. And so that, I think, is a tremendous amount of pressure on him. And I think that's where you get some of this beautiful stuff. It's like Diamonds, because there was pressure on
that. You know
that
the
coal.
Bad story, right? The story about Bad.
They have many stories together, but I haven't heard this
one. No, the bad story.
No, I haven't heard
Michael that. Contacts the people, Prince's people, saying, I want, this is a duet.
I want to do a song.
I got a song,
Prince.
It's a duet.
So he offered
bad.
An olive branch.
He gave him the olive branch. He's like, I got a song. I want it to be a duet.
We're
going
to a song called
song
Bad.
Is called Bad. Prince gets the lyric sheet. He's like,
first
line is, your butt is mine.
Prince is like, I ain't interested.
You're not saying that to me, and I ain't saying that to you. So it's not happening. He told that story.
There's also
to Chris
a story
Rock.
About how Prince. Why? By the way, this is a Michael thing. We Are the World. Prince. I saw this on YouTube the other day. I think he was originally supposed to be in the We Are the World thing, right?
Oh, really?
He's not in that.
Yeah, he's not in it.
No, he's noticeably absent.
It's a Where Am I Standing? Who? It's Michael there. It's again. It's not about. Look. Unfortunately, we like to think everybody's friends, but the truth of the matter is great art comes from people being like, I'm competing with that guy. Yeah. So in Prince's mind, there's one person he's constantly competing with, and he's like, I can beat that dude. And then I think that's what leads us to all this greatness, and I'm here for it. But
well, listen to half of our stories are about like his size and about being surprised how short he was as he skirts across the room with his high heels and all this.
Yeah.
He obviously, it's so obvious it's barely worth saying, but he had sort of a complex about his height, and it clearly went into a lot of the competition. He's apparently one of the best basketball players that ever lived, believe all the anecdotes about him. And instrumentally speaking, he isn't just one of the greatest songwriters and singers. He's also one of the greatest guitar players that's ever lived. He's up there with Hendrix and whoever else, as we just heard in that guitar solo, this is a sick guitar player. He's doing all of this and the songwriting and the composing, and every day he writes a song his whole rest of his life.
But
it's
the pop,
obsessed.
But the ability to write a pop hit. There's so many musicians who Diallo and I, or I, you know, when I was living in New York, I would have to go see him, and they'd be like, oh, you gotta go see this guy, you gotta go see that girl. And the musicianship was outstanding. The ability to write a pop song was not there.
Mm-hmm.
It is unusual to have all of that
skill.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
I'll probably say Darling Nikki too. Not because I don't think it's a classic. And by the way, I didn't even know what masturbating meant. I just knew it sounded like
crazy.
It sounded like a crazy word.
Doesn't Let's Go Crazy
and I knew
end?
That my parents cringed every time that
Excuse
part
me, doesn't
of the movie
Let's
happened.
Go Crazy end with Please Come? Please come. Am I wrong about that? Is that
no,
how it is?
Take me away, I thought.
He's come.
He's come.
He's come.
Oh, he's coming.
He's coming. He's coming. Come.
He's very, coming.
It's very,
he's
it's about the, it's very
the,
Christ-like.
The Lord is coming.
Okay, because I was listening to that Diana Ross song.
I'm coming out.
You can come inside me at the end of it.
Oh, boy.
Do you come inside me?
No, that's Minnie Riperton.
Okay, so that's Minnie Riperton, right? So I was thinking to myself, like, how the hell did that get on the radio? That was on regular-ass R&B radio.
You know, recurring theme on the show, we talk about people
saying, you can come inside
me. Do you remember?
10 times.
Do you remember Relax by Frankie? Well, apparently, do you want to come? And they told
when
people.
When you want to come,
that was not about.
It wasn't about. He said,
well,
it was
Rolling
about sex.
Stone, start me up. You make a dead man come. It's right there. They're saying it on the radio right now, somewhere in the world.
So all the record execs, all the radio execs say, hey, we don't know what that means.
Yeah, what?
We don't know what that means.
It could be anything.
All right. After long wait, I just want to say how much Prince meant to me. But yes, if I had to choose one song on Purple Rain, it would be Darling Nikki, but I'm not going to throw that away. We don't have to throw that away, but it's Darling Nikki.
We have two votes for Darling Nikki. I'm really shocked.
Which one is yours?
Well, it's a difficult choice. We all know. I'm beating around the bush just as much as you are. Maybe slightly less than you. Your beating around the bush was many minutes long.
I beat all around the bush. Yeah,
many minutes of beating around the bush.
Great album, by the way.
If I had to drop one, it would be Take Me With You. Which, to be fair, was the last song added to the soundtrack. Last song added to the soundtrack. And it kind of feels that way. It kind of feels shoved in there.
No.
The biggest lie of Purple Rain.
But that is my answer, and I'm sticking with it, and I'm proud of it.
I'm proud of your answer. All right. So the last thing I want to talk about, the revolution. Some would say Prince fired them all in kind of humiliating ways. Bashir, have you ever been fired?
Yes, plenty of times.
all right, that's a fair enough answer.
Anything I got fired.
What's the fire story? It's old news now.
I got fired. I was a PA on a show, and I got fired. And then I had no food in my house. I was broke, and I still had my key card.
I remember this.
I was like, I'm going to go I'm going to weekend and clean that place out.
So I went for food, to be clear. Food. You weren't robbing it.
No, I was broke. So I and it was like stuff that they were going to throw.
Bar.
I bought the food. I know they're going to throw it away. They throw it away. So I went in there and got two grocery bags full of like Pop-Tarts.
Those granola things.
Granola things.
Sweet Valley. What is that?
I was like, I'm going to live like a king.
They didn't need them.
On the way out, one of the writers on the show was working on the weekend. He was like, hey.
He's like, hey, Bashir.
I was like, hey. He was like, all right. I was like, yep. Shout out to that man. He's still working. He's never told anybody on me.
Oh, that's sweet.
We're colleagues now. I'm in the WGA, baby. But, oh, man, that was embarrassing.
You're welcome.
I got fired for falling asleep in the law school library when I was in college. So that's what actually started off my
fired
DJ
from what?
Career.
What were you
working I was
as?
Supposed to be working, and I fell asleep in the library. And I didn't dock myself those hours, and somebody told my boss that I had been sleeping. Long story short is that was when I lost my official term time job, and I started DJing, and I've never looked back. So there you go.
Your life got better.
We hope you've enjoyed Let's Go Crazy by Prince. We've played the parts. We've talked about the man who influenced him and his legacy. All right. That's the episode. Let's Go Crazy. I think we went crazy. And it was so much fun talking about Prince. Luxury, help me in this thing.
I have been producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury. Find me on the internet at Luxury, L-U-X-X-U-R-Y, on Instagram, and at L-U-X-X-R-Y-X-X on TikTok.
Yeah, and I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle. You'll find me at Diallo on Instagram and at Diallo Riddle.
How many L's are there?
There are two L's.
Okay, okay, okay.
Two L's. Yeah. And Bashir.
I'm on LinkedIn.
That's the best one.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming through, Bashir. I knew this was going to be an epic
episode. That was so
fun.
Thank you for coming by, man.
This is One Song. We'll see you next time. This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson and Jordan Collin, with engineering from Marcus Hom, additional production support from Leslie Guam, Charles Childers, and Alicia Shimada. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil. We'll see you next time.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too.
Aw,
I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.